the African diaspora going from the journey of slavery from Africa. Of course, didn't go directly from Africa to America. There were many, many, many stops worldwide, really, along the way. The most recognized and the frequent ones, and the ones we're discussing mostly in this class, will be the ones going from the west coast of Africa to South America, through the Caribbean, and to the what most people consider part of the southern United States, but those that have been there know better than that, certainly. The northernmost tip of the Caribbean. That's correct. New Orleans. Yeah, definitely. And so we're just going to loosely explore this. And one of the things that you, it's probably the first and one of the foremost principles about talking and performing and doing this type of interaction with African music and African-derived music is, first of all, to really tear away a lot of the barriers between audience and the musician, which seems to be more of a European custom, creating those barriers. And it seems like in African music, they realize it's really indistinguishable. Just some people happen to have an instrument, and others are carrying theirs in their voice or with their feet, dancing. You know, I mean, for years and years and years, I grew up, and we would, on our garage bands, we'd practice and try to get really good, and then we'd put together the set list, the proverbial set list. And then, you know, when I became a soloist, I think I saw Tom Rush, and he had a set list taped onto his side of the guitar. Well, that's a good trick. I'll start doing that, you know, and started doing that. But set list don't really work that I saw in African music. For one thing, that the first barrier to go down is to think that you're in control of the music. You got to relinquish control, first of all, and let the music take you and the audience wherever it wants to go. And the best part to do that is just kind of feel out for the audience. What do you think would be good to start off with? Some type of invocation, get everybody going, and then just let it take you where it wants to go. In my first and only transcendental meditation class when I was around 16, I remember the teacher saying the same thing. Your mind, the inner mind, or as Mississippi John Hurt used to say, my second mind. If I'd only listen to it, my second mind, that's it, right? If you listen to your second mind knows where it wants to go. You know, so it's just kind of getting away of all those other distractions. So in African, whether it's drumming or, of course, these are just generalizations, and I'm sure there's plenty of exceptions in a country with thousands and thousands of languages and thousands of styles of music. But as a generalization, I saw people really just digging in to what the audience wanted. And not without this we get into this thing, well, I'm the artist, and if I compromise and lower myself to play something that the audience would actually like, I'll lose my integrity, you know that. And you know that the way I look at it is, I'll do anything I got in my hat or under it, as long as it's something I believe in, to help get that message across. And that seems true in the in the roots of this music. So, and then once they saw the audience reacting, then you get into the pulse of where the audience is at, whether they're just sitting there or whether they're dancing. Hopefully they're dancing, you know. And then that pulse will tell you what kind of counter rhythm maybe you should do next, so that it'll stay interesting to the audience, you know? It's just like the word groove. The word groove really is a carpenter's word, right? And it's based on repetition. But, you know, you want to make it smooth. But if you do it too often, it don't become a groove. It becomes a rut. And you want to avoid the ruts, but you want to keep grooving, you know? So I'll start off with a instrument that's traditionally known as a African American predecessor of the blues guitar, and this is a diddly bow. And if you don't know bow, there we go. All right. And I just presumed that Bo Diddley got his name from that. But then somebody asked him not all that long ago, well, did you get your name from the diddly bow? And he's pretty cancanous anyhow. You know, he might have just said no for the hell of it. But he said no, that it had nothing to do with the diddly bow. He's Bo Diddley. But then I also heard that kind of like a rascallion, another good old Southern term. Right, Sadie? Rascallion. That's right. All right. That a like if you were a mischievous young boy, your grandma might, where's that Bo Diddley anyhow? So knowing Bo Diddley a little bit, the chances are he is more like to get his name from that than the diddly bow. But anyhow, so I thought this was a African-American Southern folk instrument, and certainly it is. When people couldn't afford a guitar, you know, I was 12 when I got my first guitar. It was about 40 years ago this year, and I saw the Beatles, and that's all it took, you know. And my parents, if I had promised to practice, they would get me a guitar. But even in that late a date, 1964, if I had been black and living in Mississippi or Alabama or Louisiana, who knows, my parents quite well, especially if still under the oppression of a Jim Crow economic system, social system, whatever, they probably very well might not have been able to afford a guitar. So they would have built me a diddly bow. This has got a tuning peg, and it's got a pickup on it and a real B string, about a 17 gauge, something like that. But back in the day, they would just use the nail, a couple of nails, and a wire off of a broom, and certainly no pickup. They might have used some kind of can or a tin for a resonator. So I encourage you to make these. If you look up diddly bow on your search engine, you will find a couple of sites that will give you instructions how to make these too. So, but before I play, I should say, so I thought it was an African-American instrument, but then I went to Brazil. I went to Brazil and then I went to Salvador, which is probably the most African place in the world outside of the continent of Africa itself. And if you go from Salvador and just go due east all the way, you will find yourself in Angola, all right? So I haven't been to Angola, but I have a sneaking suspicion I want to find some diddly bows in Angola, because when I went to Salvador, I saw several music stores where they had the real diddly bows, just nails and wire and still done. So it's just a drone instrument. It G. We tune to the balafon, so it's a little lower than I'm used to, but that's cool. I'll just do something solo on it one time. Thank you. Yeah, motherless children have a hard time when your mother is dead. Well, they ain't got no place to go. They watch wander from door to door. Well, no one loves you like your mother can when you're. Well, Papa will do the best he can when you're. Oh, Papa will do the. Well, Papa would do the best he can. So many things Papa can't understand. And nobody loves you like your mother can when you're. Well, sister would do the best she can do when your mother is dead. Well, sister would do the. When your mother is dead, well, sister would do the best she can do. As soon as she get married, turn her back on you. Nobody loves you like you. When your. Well, motherless children have a. Motherless children have a. Well, they ain't got no place to go. They just wander from door to door. Motherless children have a hard time when you're. When your mother is dead. When your mother is dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm just at the tip of the iceberg. So I feel very, very underprepared about talking about such a broad scope of as the title of this workshop, from Ghana to the blues, you know. But it's taken me this long just to get a little bit of knowledge about the blues, let alone all the multi-thousands of styles of music that are in Africa. But I'm just sharing with you some of the impressionistic viewpoints and philosophy about the music, and trying to share a little bit of that and make comparisons with what I've learned about the blues. Well, for one thing, I remember Taj Mahal. I was doing an interview with him about 30 years ago, and because I was bringing up Furry Lewis and Peg Leg Sam, and I knew nobody knew of them north of Boston, and so I thought if I got Taj to talk about them, that more people would come. And Taj was like really under a lot of pressure to get up and perform. He was splitting the night with Ry Cooder, and the, you know, everything was back like 2 hours late. The bus had arrived late. So Ry was playing. I went over to Taj backstage, snuck backstage, and I said, Taj, I hate to bother you. And he looked at me and he went, yeah, but you will anyhow. I said, ooh, testy a little bit, yeah. And I said, listen, Taj, this isn't so much about you. This is about, I'm trying to bring up two of your heroes as well as mine, Furry Lewis and Peg Leg Sam. And if you say a few words, everybody knows who you are. But if you say a few words, they might come to our show. And he just said, sit down. And we talked for 45 minutes. And I did ask him the most important things he learned from all the old bluesmen himself, John Hurt, Skip James, and so many. He said two things. He said, number one, to relax, you know. And when you're playing the blues or jazz or any kind, especially in improvisational music, I think that's really important. Because once again, don't let your mind get in the way of the music. You let the music play you. That was and that's a Mance Lipscomb quote, so you know it's true. And second of all, he said, I learned to insulate myself. Well, I think that speaks for itself if you know about the lives of the old guys, right? You know, and how they lived and how most of them died. So you know what he meant there, okay? So well, let me do one more song on the diddly bow for you. This is a one little thing called Good Morning, Little Schoolgirl. Sometimes people ask me, well, how in the world can you play those blues songs in a school without being arrested as a pedophile? You know? And the songsters a lot of times had the G versions and the R versions, you know? And so I take some of the songs, I'll sing Salty Dog and all these songs, you know, and just Mr. Diddy Wah Diddy and songs like that. And I sing them one way for the folks at camp and another way for little 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds and things like that. And so I've changed some of this song, which was originally a song from Sonny Boy Williamson, not Rice Miller, but John Lee Williamson. The guy that died by getting stabbed with an ice pick in the back of his head about 11 times, you know? Hate it when that happens.
That'll kill you.
Oh, man. That'll kill you. Suicide. Yeah. That's what was found. That's what the police said down in Mississippi. Suicide. Ran into it over and over. Like that, Scott was talking about Stephen Biko last night. Yeah, same type of suicide. Yeah. Same type of accident. Yes. Anyhow, Good Morning, Little Schoolgirl. And if you heard either one of the Sonny Boy Williamsons do it, or Howlin' Wolf do it, you know, you knew I had a challenge to try to adapt this for kids. So first thing I do is I have all the guys, all the boys in the school, they sing the song with me, first of all. And then all the girls, you guys have a choice. You answer back. When all of us guys sing. And then it goes to the five.
Would you want accompaniment on it?
Yeah. G.
Good morning, little schoolgirl. Good morning, little schoolgirl. Can I go home?
Now, see, that's where I changed some of the lyrics right there.
Can I go to school? Can I go to school with you? Oh, tell your daddy and your mama, I'm just a schoolboy too.
Guys sing that, ladies, you sing, when we first asked that question, good morning, little school girl, you go, what? Good morning, we sing it again, good morning, little school girl, what? And now I ain't gonna tell you what to say the next time when we sing, can I go to school? Wait. Can I go to school with you? And I'm not gonna tell you what to say. You can say yes, you can say no. It's strictly up to you. All right. And then we'll all come back. Tell your mama and your papa, I'm a schoolboy too. All right, there we go. Good morning, little school girl. Good morning, little school girl. Can I go home at school? Can I go to school with you? Not about 50-50, that's not bad. Oh, tell your daddy and your mama, I'm a little schoolboy too. I've been all over this world. I wanna be your little schoolboy. I want you to be my schoolgirl. I buy me an airplane. I'm gonna fly above the ground. If you won't be my little schoolgirl, though, I'll never let my airplane down. Let's sing it, guys. Good morning, little schoolgirl. Good morning, little schoolgirl. Can I go to school? Can I go to school with you? All right. I'll tell your daddy and your mama, I'm gonna be a schoolboy too. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Could you do me an enormous favor and maybe run up to the sitar and bring back the talking drum with the it's got a little stick on. All right, thank you so much. All right, so this the cool thing about the slide guitar, of course, is that it really sounds like the human voice. And the blues, when you're playing the blues, well, let me put it this way. This is where I got learned about the blues, as far as it being a vocal music. I got learned seriously from my friend Philadelphia Jerry Ricks about this, who, if you run into Jerry Ricks, he'll school you on just about anything he's talking to you about. You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. He likes to hold court, my old friend Jerry Ricks. You know Jerry, Charlie? Oh, you guys got, oh yeah, off a whole day, you know, to do that at least. Anyhow, 30 years ago, sitting outside of Harry Tuff's Denver Folklore Center, playing with Tim O'Brien and some other people, just sitting around in our early 20s, picking and grinning, and there was a jazz guitarist that worked there, and we were trying to go back and forth. I didn't know much about jazz guitar, but it sure sounded good. And he was telling us about sweet blues and how jazz could be sweet blues. And we were talking about different kinds of blues. And Jerry walks in and goes, well, the blues is a vocal music. And I'm going, who's this guy, man? The blues is a vocal music, man. Have you ever heard of a guy named Miles Davis? You know, the best-selling album of all time, Kind of Blue. Hello. And he goes, pardon me, young man. What my friend, Miles, as he likes me to call him, what my friend Miles was saying is he's vocalizing through his instrument. Therefore, it's vocal music. Oh, so every time, Jerry's the humbler, you know. Jerry's knowledge is the humbler. He'll take you to school. So blues really is a vocal music. So when you're improvising, you really, whether it's vocally or vocally through your instrument, you got to leave room in that space and let the song tell the story. But this is not, why is it a vocal music? Why is it a vocal music? Well, one reason, as far as African American blues is, it's because not only was the Jim Crow system, thank you so much, you the man. All right, thank you. All right, that's the nicest thing anybody ever said to me. All right. The blues is such a vocal music. I think one of the reasons is because there was no, up until the late 1960s, blacks didn't have any type of real freedom of speech, especially down south. So the really, to really vocal, even the tone of your voice, just the tone of your voice, you might say, yes, but if you said, yes, that's a big difference. And if you had the audacity to look at that person, that white person in the eye, then that very well, this is also the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Emmett Till, too. So that you could very well have that same type of fate. So the blues, I heard a blues man say just recently that, whenever you hear, you were talking about the word trouble, God's going to trouble the water. To me, whether it's gospel or blues, whenever you hear the word trouble, you could replace the word trouble with the man, and so the spirituals as well as the gospel and blues really are expressing that, because the blues gets nasty, man. It gets mean, and that's the only outlet for to get that meanness and there's the song called all one chord. Really, when the blues first started, a lot of times it would just be one chord, much like the modal music of Western Africa. When I was a little baby, about the age of 5, my mama and my papa told me I'd be the greatest thing alive. Now I'm a man, I just turned 21. I don't want no one to tell me I can't have my fun, 'cause I'm a man. When I spell it out, you echo me. I spell am. I spell A, I spell N. What's that spell? I can't hear you. What's that spell? No B. Oh yeah. Why? Now take all your pretty women, make it jump and shout. Whole world gonna know what I'm talking about. When I shoot my gun, I never miss. You pretty little women, I know you can't resist, 'cause I'm a man. I spell am. No. Give me a little cajones here. I'm a man. I spell am. I know the Cooper brothers, they got a lot to sing about these days. So I spell am, I spell A, I spell N. What's that spell? What's that spell? What's that spell? No B.
Oh yeah. Why? I'm a maddest boy. Maddest boy. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. There's a guy by the name of Big Daddy Kinsey who just passed away not too long ago. Big Daddy Kinsey and his band, of course, The Kinsey Report. Yeah. And his sons are still playing. Really, really good musicians. He was definitely, Big Daddy was definitely influenced by Muddy Waters, played slide guitar so close, and his voice was so much like Muddy. And Big Daddy would always close his show. I saw him and opened up for him a couple of times, saw him several times. Every show, he ended with that song, I'm a Man. And last time we worked together about 10 years ago, I was backstage, and I said, Big Daddy, why is it you always end your set with that song, I'm a Man? And he looked at me, and before he answered, he went like this. This is like 1998, something like that. Before he answered, he went like this. And then he got real close to me and said, because man, back in the day, we used to sing that song to each other to remind each other who we really were, not what we were told we were. And for years I listened to that song and I'd be singing, what the heck is he singing? I know I'm a man, am a and no B. Oh yeah, why? No B, oh why. So anyhow, so I'm a man. One chord, just vamp. So that's the thing about the way we look at music so often in this country is either as a art form, a high art form, like whether it's folk music or jazz or art, or we look at it as kind of more like for debauchery, just rock and roll, disco, getting down, funky, you know? And it's like, it's either high art or just, you know, kind of for divine decadence or whatever. And a little bit, sure there's a segment that, especially in the black community, that really just keep the roots, Thomas Dorsey, and the African roots of just really giving it up, putting yourself in a trance. But, you know, you didn't have to signify about all this type of stuff. In Africa, people, it was widely accepted that this music is for a change of consciousness. This music is to just exorcise all those demons out of you, and you just don't give up. You don't give up. You keep playing till you give it all up. And if you ain't giving it all up, man, you better not get on the stage. And the same thing would be, you know, trance. You take this to America and to the blues community, they call it cutting heads. Meaning, man, if you're not, it's not so much the chops, meaning it's just the, once again, if you're just not giving it your full, you know, you're gonna get your head cut right off the stage. So it's some people might look at that as intense competition. I guess it is, but it's really just like you gotta, you know, it's just you really show what you stand for and give it up. So that's, and whether you're doing bebop, Charlie Parker, or John Coltrane. John Coltrane, of course, brought things back to a more spiritual center. One of the songs that John Coltrane did, he called it The River. And I probably heard him do it on a different anthologies or stuff like that. But it really was the song, The Drinking Gourd. So we're gonna do that. We're gonna do The Drinking Gourd. As far as secret, you know, like I said, every time you hear the word trouble, to me, you could just, whether it's spiritual or blues, you could just replace that with just the man. you know? Trouble, I've had them all my days. I swear trouble gonna carry me to my grave, Mississippi John Hurt, right? Trouble in mind, but it's a voice, the blues is a voice of optimism. It really, the blues is a music of hope against all, like Cornel West says, I'm a prisoner of hope, you know? I love that statement. And trouble in mind, I'm blue, but I won't be blue all way, you know? That's real, real. Interesting. So these hidden meanings and coded messages, of course, go back to the Underground Railroad, if not before. I only learned this song about a little over 13 years ago, something like that. And I learned it from one of my Blues in the School classes. The kids actually taught me the song. And then I went back and dug up a old Smithsonian recording of some chain gang singers doing this, man. It was just like, whew, too intense. But we'll do it here. Of course, the Drinking Gore was African American's name for the Big Dipper. If you look at this instrument down here on the floor, this is a balafon, they call it Mali. In Ghana, they simply call it a vibraphone. And if you look at the resonators, those are made out of gourds. We use gourds to carry water too, called calabashes. You split a gourd in half, then you have yourself a drinking gourd. Well, what they call the drinking gourd, we call the Big Dipper. Pointing to the North Star, they would navigate their course to freedom. Whites and blacks helped all out on that Underground Railroad, though. Harriet Tubman had a companion named Peg Leg Joe. Peg Leg Joe was a white man. Being a white had a little bit more freedom, more autonomy. Going through the South, getting jobs in plantations, but his job really was to pass on the message of freedom. Since it was illegal to know how to read and write, knowing how to read and write could get you your fingers cut off, your tongue cut, mutilated to prevent you from spreading the knowledge. So that, like Malcolm X remembered about the bookie in the lottery that he used, the illegal lottery he used to run. Thinking back to the man, this man never forgot a number. And when Malcolm X challenged him to his number, he was pretty much excommunicated, had to leave town in a hurry. But Malcolm thought back to how much this man, who could have such an acute memory, could have been anything or anybody given the opportunity. But not knowing how to read or write, not having that privilege, a lot of African Americans developed acute memories. So they spread the music and the message of the Underground Railroad through songs. I said, follow the drinking gourd, follow the drinking gourd, for the whole man is waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking gourd. Now when the sun comes back and the first quail calls, follow the drinking gourd, everybody. For the woman is waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking. So everybody sing, follow the drinking gourd, follow the drinking gourd. For the woman is waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking gourd. You know
the river bank, it makes a very good road. Dead trees will show you the way. Left foot, pick foot, traveling on. Follow the drinking God. So everybody sing, follow the drinking God. Follow the drinking God. For the woman is waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking God. Where the river it ends between two hills, follow the drinking God. There's another river on the other side, follow the drinking. Oh, everybody saying follow the drinking God. Follow the drinking God. The woman is waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking God. All right. Good golly, Mr. Raleigh. Mr. Raleigh, give him a nice hand. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
4:59.
All right, I guess that's, we're going to end on that one. Thank you so much, everybody. Let's have a nice hand for Raleigh. All right. Thanks so much. I learned a lot.